Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my little Christmas elf, Kyler K. Jafari.
Got a head for business and a body for sin.
Ho, ho, ho. Well, we're recording this right on Christmas Day, honey. So happy holidays. By the time we upload this, it's probably going to be, you know, February.
Don't even.
It'll be Arbor Day. Happy Arbor Day, everyone.
I think we've quit making promises at this point.
But yeah, we just thought, you know, we're in the mood. Let's put on the latest episode, Fathers and Sons. It's a homecoming. It's very kind of familiar and festive. So, you know, I thought I went with the Christmas season.
We can just channel our lack of family reunion during the Christmas tide through Dynasty instead.
Yeah, we're not with our real family, so let's hang out with the family we wish we had. I don't know about that. Those characters.
Yeah, these people are monsters.
They really are, and you can see that in this episode. Ooh, boy, the drama. Well, Kyler, let everybody and me, because I think I know what this is, but I need to know the ingredients.
You were bitching and moaning that they drink so much brandy on this show.
No. Wait a minute. I wasn't bitching and moaning. I just, in this episode, they were drinking brandy. Mark offers Fallon a brandy in his room back at La Mirage. And I said, you know, I don't feel like we drink enough brandy.
And nobody drinks enough brandy. It's this undiscovered or forgotten, I should say, liquor that should be in everybody's bar, not on the sofa table with a decanter, you know, as the Carringtons do.
Well, we have decanters and there's no brandy in them. So that was my point. I was just saying.
But we don't have a sofa table.
It would be nice to have around. Anyway, what the hell is this? It's not just brandy.
No, because just brandy, you were correct when you said earlier, that's a little bit more of a night drink or an after dinner drink.
And it is 9 a.m. right now.
Right. So we have to make a mixed drink with it. So this is the stinger. You would be forgiven for calling it a brandy stinger, but the original stinger is just brandy. So there's no reason to call it that.
Just stinger.
I think it sort of survived in the 60s and 70s as a vodka stinger. It's not a great drink. I've heard
other versions of stingers existing.
Here's the thing. All it is a couple or 3 ounces of brandy. And the original, I believe, was 2-1 with creme de menthe, which is this grosso post-prohibition. There were all these like trendy creme liqueurs that happened in the 40s through the 70s that were just kind of nasty. And there's a reason why they didn't come back when all the craft cocktail revolution happened 10 years ago.
Well, cheers.
We've dialed down the proportions here. And it's more like a martini style where it's like all brandy and just a teensy drop of the creme de menthe, because nobody really wants to taste all of that. It's like cough syrup, you know.
Oh, this is a great Christmas cocktail. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love this.
I had forgotten it's this drink. Just enough. I used to make these a little more often, and it just sort of you brought up brandy, and I was like, well, what's a drink you can make with brandy since we can't just drink brandy
at 9 a.m.
And it's Christmas, so it all just kind of
interlocks. Oh, I love this. No, this is keeping me in the festive holiday spirit.
Well, if
honey.
You want the actual proportions, I think I did this like 7 or 8 to 1. So the creme de menthe is just kind of a whisper in the bottom there.
All right. Well, I know we have some cocktail fiends out there that listen. You need to write that recipe down and try it.
I mean, it's just there enough, you know? And actually the brandy, you know,
like sucking on a candy.
Brandy's already kind of a mellow situation, and then you kind of dilute it ever so slightly by stirring it. I don't recommend shaking this drink.
Well, and what I like about mixing the mint with the alcohol is that it gives you this burst of
menthol cigarette.
No, that's not what I was going to say. It just gives you a burst of flavor and energy, but it's not too sweet or saccharine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think the original is very sweet and saccharine, and that's probably why nobody would drink this today.
Yeah, I could see this going off the rails real quickly, yeah. But I think it was smart to dial down the creme de menthe.
And you get your brandy fix. Everybody go out and buy a bottle of brandy. You've been missing out.
Well, we're getting our Dynasty fix because we had a couple of prezzies from friends and family that were Dynasty themed. I guess that's what happens when you host a Dynasty podcast. People are like, well, what do I get those two freaks? I guess I'll get them the Dynasty TV series collection puzzle. Our dear friends, Vinny and Lauren, I guess they went on eBay or some Etsy shop or something, because this is a sealed puzzle, 551 pieces. I don't know what the one extra puzzle piece is. Maybe they needed that for Crystal's bangs, but it's called The Happy Couple, and it's a gorgeous portrait of John Forsythe, Blake Carrington, and Linda Evans as Crystal Carrington, and she's draped in a fur with exposed shoulder. I mean, she's never looked better.
She's never looked like this on the show.
Yeah, this is probably from later on when they were.
She's usually got like a sweater up to her neck or something covering her cleavage at least.
Yeah,
so this
I want to
see outrageous.
This Crystal.
Obviously, they had to sell puzzles, so this is what you get.
Yeah, you know what they say, sex sells puzzles. But you noted that this might be difficult because there's actually a lot
of. Let's
like,
get practical.
Black.
I mean, I'm a puzzle person from way back, but I know everybody's gotten into puzzles these days. There's a lot of black, and it's not just in Blake's tuxedo.
Yeah, Blake's wearing a tuxedo, but then they're like
it's like one of those Olin Mills, you know, family portraits but it's like it's the sexy one, and it's just a black background. I don't know how you would do this puzzle, even if it's only 551 pieces. So,
well, the other
I just might put her bare shoulder and fur coat together and then put the rest of the puzzle in the back
of
the box.
Fuck Blake. Leave him out. I don't know. Well, the other thing is do we even open it? Because I went to take a look inside and it's still sealed. So this is mint, creme de mint condition here, this puzzle.
I don't know. I don't know that there's a huge collectible market for this when it's sealed or not sealed. So I say just bust it open and do what you're supposed to do with it.
Well, the other gift that we received, I was delighted to see under the tree a little tag on one of the prezzies that said, from Claudia.
Well, now you said all of our friends and family had gotten us something, or fans. And so now I'm like, oh, did Claudia get us? Is she a friend?
She would be a friend of ours, I think. We
I
love
mean,
Claudia.
I'm a friend of hers. I'm a friend of Claudia.
Well, she's apparently got a lot of friends all over the world. So Claudia, a.k.a. Kyler, purchased a vintage edition of Playboy from April 1983. And I opened this up and there's a beautiful brunette with some bottom boob exposed. She's not totally topless.
You don't usually get bottom boob. That's an interesting pose.
Yeah, this seems early for bottom boob, but I did not recognize her. But then right to the left of her on the cover, it says Dynasty Star Pamela Bellwood goes native and an exotic exclusive pictorial. And I was like, well, is that Pamela Bellwood on the cover of Playboy? No.
I know. I'm like, why isn't she on the cover?
I think that
she's got to be way more important than whoever this nice young woman is.
Well, they've got an interview with Paul Newman and Norman Mailer. And then they also have Ladies of Spain, 10 pages of spicy senoritas.
Eek.
So I'm thinking this is a spicy senorita, but yeah, fuck them. They should have given Pamela Bellwood the cover.
Especially once you open it up and see what's under the hood.
Oh, honey. Once you open this up, I was not prepared, especially not on Christmas morning. Thank God we're not allowed to see our family or friends, because this is scandalous. So the feature is called Going Native. Television's Pamela Bellwood visits another dynasty among the Maasai of Kenya. This is Pamela Bellwood getting painted topless with these
full tribal jewelry.
Yeah, tribal jewelry, body yaddy yaddy, hanging out with the men and women of a Maasai tribe.
Well, I mean, this is what Pamela Bellwood's been up to since Claudia left town.
I guess so. So this is April 1983. Actually, the episode that we're talking about today, Fathers and Sons, I know you're probably listening to this like, yo, when are you going to fucking talk about the episode? You've been talking about your Christmas presents for 30 minutes. The episode that we're on today originally aired in March. So this came out a little later. Spoiler alert, I know this because I've been spoiled. Kyler, you know this because you've watched Dynasty. Claudia,
and because I'm spoiled.
Claudia will be coming back. So I think this was timed to her return. And oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, this was putting her back on the radar.
Capturing attention. Now, you know, even though I am a writer editor myself, I did not read Playboy for the articles. I just looked at the pictures.
Yeah, no, I mean, come on now.
So maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later when
I read it for the cigarette and the liquor ads.
I know every ad in here is for
and the
Jen.
Pamela Bellwood spread in April 1983.
Now you say spread, but this is just topless, and it's very tasteful and fierce as fuck.
It's honestly, if you just take it aesthetically on its own, it's kind of artistic. I mean, yes, there are breasts. I don't know. I feel like there's a power dynamic that's visible here where she's equal to them, but I don't know, and I don't want to read too much into that. But anyway, so
I mean, this could be considered cultural appropriation.
Well, that's okay. So now if you want to recontextualize it, yes. I mean, it's a little, it's not cringy, but it's like going native. That's not a term we can use anymore. You know, that's already a problem.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I think it's just highly interesting. The images are very hard to find on the internet. Like, you can find a couple, but you kind of just have to buy the magazine to like see the whole thing, because apparently nobody else cares about this as much as I do.
Well, I love it.
Like one
thank
copy
you.
Kicking around.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I promise I will read the article, and maybe we'll do a little bit of a deeper dive into it, because I think the article will kind of explain why Pamela Bellwood was hanging out in Kenya. But
well,
yeah,
don't thank me. Thank Claudia.
Thank you, Claudia.
P.S. This just reinforces my love for the character.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to diminish anything, but oh my God, what a great rack. Perky.
All right, enough. Just go back to reading the articles.
Well, should we take a break and get into this week's episode, Fathers and Sons?
Let's do that.
This week's installment of Dynasty As They Want to Be is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our darlings a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Trial, you just have to sign up. Go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast. That's NASTY podcast to browse their unrivaled selection of audio programs. You know, they got Barack Obama's new book on there.
You've told me.
No, that was Michelle Obama's book. They have separate books, honey. You also want to know what's on Audible? Dynasty As They Want to Be. We're available on Audible now.
Wait, you wrote a book?
No. The podcast is available on Amazon Music, Audible.
Well, I listened to a book.
Yeah, on Audible. Hopefully you use the code NASTYPODCAST at audibletrial.com, or just text NASTYPODCAST to 500-500. Welcome back. Oh, nothing like having your long lost son who you thought got killed on an oil rig,
but instead just got a face transplant.
They talk about the plastic surgery so much.
It's so self-conscious.
Even the servants are like worried about his facial reconstruction.
This isn't the first soap opera where they replaced somebody with another actor, and I think there's, this is not even the first soap opera where somebody was under the guise of fake play, face plat.
Drink your brandy stinger.
Fake plastic surgery.
It's just so bizarre that they make such a big deal. Mrs. Gunnarsson is all worried about it, and she goes into the new gym, I guess. One of the 45 rooms of the Carrington Mansion is the second gym that Crystal's working out in, and she's all preparing a feast and worried what he's going to look like. And anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we're still in Singapore, but this is the episode we're finally done with Singapore. We have a little bit of Blake.
This really is a slow boat from China.
Yeah.
You've got a son who's a Carrington. Tell me you don't want to see him.
A son? How do you know he's mine? How will I ever know, really know? I have a wife who ran off to Hollywood, remember? I saw her there, naked in that studio with that creep photographer. He could be the father. Anybody west of the Rockies could be the father.
He resembles you, Stephen.
Which me? This me or the old me?
Yeah, the whole MO to get Stephen back in Denver is little Danny. And Stephen wasn't even really that into it anyway. He was like, I don't care that I have a son. I'm done with you guys. That's how much he fucking hates this family. Happy holidays.
I would alter that thought because I think that Fallon is actually the reason.
Yeah.
Or at least she's the
part of it.
The first reason why. And that's the convincing moment for Stephen. Mm-hmm. Because up until this point, obviously he's, you know, thought he was going to go out and blaze a new trail and he didn't need the Carringtons anymore.
Right. Yeah. Blake is not going to be the one convincing him to come back. He's the main adversary here. I know he's not happy with his mom either.
Well,
but
you know, this is kind of returning the show a little bit, and just for a moment, to the generational divide that this show kind of touches on and probably made a little more out of earlier. But
well, and we've always said we love the relationship between Stephen and Fallon. It's been sincere, yeah, and honest, and really the only thing that hasn't cracked.
Well, it gives me pangs of nostalgia because this does a little bit button the show back up to the original place of Stephen being the center with Claudia on one side and Fallon on the other. And once Fallon kind of became less of an important character, and once Stephen just disappeared, and once Claudia was sent off to the bin, the show kind of turned into a very different thing, and it became very sort of more obsessed with artifice. And
now I will say, you have been saying that a lot lately, and I haven't totally agreed, but it's not something I've really wanted to go to the mat about. But this episode, I really did feel like it was veering into a soapy, over-the-top, cheesy kind of way. And you know what did it for me? A couple of times, characters talking to the camera where they kind of turn away. It's a very soapy thing.
Oh, there's a name for that, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a French word or just something dirty, but yeah, it's the over the shoulder camera shot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's back talking or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, when Crystal goes to Alexis's penthouse to tell her that Stephen is in fact alive, she does it. Alexis turns away. She's still talking to Crystal, but she's got her back to her, and it's like that never happens in reality. That is such soap blocking, and that it's not real. And oh my God, can we just comment on Alexis wearing full face to bed, and then she has her like negligee with the matching robe?
I mean, we talk about this stuff from time to time, but it really, you have to call it out because it's still ridiculous.
It's totally
just because
ridiculous.
They keep doing it doesn't mean it's not ridiculous that she goes to bed in full makeup. And so the two notes at the top of my list about this episode were lots and lots of nightwear. Everybody is in flowing nightgowns. Like, and it's kind of like the reason, I guess, why I love Blanche from the Golden Girls so much is like there's all of this like great nightwear. But it's also kind of like, well, is this a nighty episode? Why is everybody in night attire in this episode?
The timing of this episode is pretty bizarre because we have Jeff and Kirby coming back from the rescue effort at the Desert Inn, sneaking into the mansion and calling Derek the pilot, which I love that my name was used as a
character. That's just because you want Jeff to call you in the middle of the night
so he can hop on
top of me.
Right. And then you
take him to Reno. Take off to Reno, which is what they do. And were they getting married by the same old couple that married Steven and Sammy Joe?
What I think there's only so many old couples in the at Central Casting.
I guess this was like a trope in the 80s that old married couple would marry young
couples.
Okay, so
it's interesting you bring that up because like it's clearly not material, but it's fun to think like the same old married couple that runs a motel on the side got woken up in the middle of the night to marry Steven and Sammy Joe as well as Jeff and Kirby. There's not really much to that, but it's just a fun thought.
Anyway, so yeah, so she has pizza and Chianti with Adam, then gets rescued, then sneaks back to the mansion, then calls Derek the pilot. They fly to Reno, they get married, and then they consummate their relationship in some Louis the 14th themed honeymoon suite in Reno. This is a long ass night for Dynasty.
It's weird that it's in Reno too. Why isn't it in Las Vegas? I feel like they have a chapel o' love. You can get because married in Las Vegas.
I think that's where he married Fallon, so it's probably got bad vibes. Uh-huh. You know? That just goes to show what a fuck up Jeff is, that he's marrying all of these women. And Kirby even calls him out on it too. She's like, this is a rebound,
oh,
right?
Yeah. I think Jeff's a total serial monogamist.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe undercover, but Kirby's clearly already figured that
out. They were
out.
On the top of the covers, actually.
Well, that's more night attire, you know? Everybody's in pajamas and robes and nightgowns. It's ridiculous. It's like an Agent Provocateur ad.
I'm just wondering if...
If what?
This isn't a classic case of a divorced man.
Go on.
Marrying on the rebound. There, I said it.
And I hope you're sorry you said it.
I am. Just tell me one thing. Just one thing. Do you want me as much now as you wanted Fallon once?
Yes.
It's just ridiculous that she asks if she's his rebound after they've already exchanged rings and done the deed who knows how many times.
Well, also the two of them are just like not fun chemistry. I mean, they're fine as actors together, like playing the scene or whatever, but
no, they're not.
There's a lot of like smushing of faces. They look like a couple of Muppets.
Yeah, we get more of that fake.
And
weird...
Kirby is Kermit and Jeff is Mrs. Piggy.
I know we've complained about it before.
Or Miss Piggy, excuse me.
Ms. Piggy.
Oh, Kirby. No, I'm bad at that. Never mind. I can't, my throat won't do it today.
I know we've complained about it before, but they do more of that dry, it's not even kissing, it's just face touching. I thought about it some more and there's like no moisture between their lips. Like, I wonder if these two just couldn't fucking stand
and
each
look,
other.
Y'all, I realize this all sounds very uncomfortable to talk about, but I totally agree and I think it needs to be talked about because yes, this is like dry docking, but with faces, and there's not even chapstick or Vaseline or anything.
I was thinking the same thing. They need to put some chapstick
on. Like the makeup is matte, and they're, I don't know, you could dissect this.
It's two pieces of drywall being rubbed together.
Yes, there you go.
Anyway, we're jumping around a lot.
We like to jump around. That's what we do.
Jump around. I feel like Mrs. Gunnarsson and Steven have more chemistry than Kirby and Jeff.
I want to see that makeout scene.
She was like a little too excited for him to come home. And then, you know, they built up this entrance. And I guess I get it because it is Jack Coleman stepping into this iconic role. And they have all the servants lined up and the family has gathered. Alexis and Adam come. Alexis treats this like she's going to the fucking opening night of some Toscana opera or
something. I was
going to
say, everybody is kind of dressed for a funeral or for a gala ball. I can't really tell. But either way, they're all wearing like lots of black and it's all very dressy and glamorous looking. And, you know, then it's juxtaposed with Steven, who's like in the Sears catalog, 1984 or 1983.
Three.
Whatever. How much did the Sears catalog really change from 1 year to the next? But anyway, like he's clearly like not there for that, and they're all like making it this big occasion.
I've never been invited to a party for somebody who was thought
just got a
deceased.
Face transplant and
yeah. Actually, maybe I have been now that I think about it. But yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing. Like, rich people have plastic surgery parties. Yeah. It's like a baby shower, but for your face.
Exactly. I don't know what the rules are for something like that, but they treated it like it was a ball.
This scene's supposed to be super exciting, and they really just lay on the schmaltz.
Oh, I mean, it's when Crystal descends from the staircase holding little Danny. I'm glad we're recording this on Christmas because she's the Virgin Mary.
She's Virgin Mary descending from heaven with the Christ child. I mean, it's ridiculous. Come on.
So fucking schmaltzy. And is this tugging at people's heartstrings? Because he doesn't really seem to care that much about the baby.
Well, that's kind of actually what I like. And I don't know how intentional that was. I don't know who the director of this particular episode was. And I'm
Jerome
not really Cortland, sure matters,
your boy.
But yeah, I mean, It may or may not be intentional that he's very like meh about all of this. And meanwhile, the dramatics of the actual production of this scene are so over the top ridiculous. First of all, you've got Alexis, who does her 1938 entrance in her sort of a column gown, but it's got a suit top thing going on. It's like, is that even appropriate for what this is? And
well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what is appropriate.
Linda
for
coming down the stairs with the baby, like I don't, from on high. It's
my favorite.
It's so much.
My favorite part about that wild scene, though, is that Blake stopped to try to make it about himself, even though this should be about Steven.
That's what Blake does.
Of
that's
course,
what he do.
He's like a little bitch. But Crystal coming down at just the wrong time interrupts him speechifying, which I'm actually very thankful for. That was a Christmas miracle. We didn't have to listen to him.
Well, you know, he even says mouth, like, well, hold on, I've got to get a word in first.
Yeah,
you know, because
like, oh, don't,
here we go, the patriarch got to patronize. Mm-hmm. You know, like, nobody wanted your speech.
Well, there is a
it's
lot
certainly
of
not Steven's moment. Steven doesn't want to be here for any of this.
Yeah, there is a lot of sadness surrounding this, and we get sweet Jeanette and talking to Crystal in the baby nursery about this.
Well, I'm happy for Steven, but I know how torn apart you were when you lost your own baby. And you had such plans for this one. I'm sorry for you.
Don't be sorry. It's Stephen's child.
Well, I only hope that you can have
another one.
I don't know what made me say that.
This kind of is signaling that Crystal's not going to get this free baby. Well, not free.
I love that Jeanette really steps in it, too.
She always is stepping in it. She says the wrong thing every time, and yet they still keep her on the payroll. She should have been fired after she testified against Blake, you know, two seasons ago. Jesus.
And she just, like, leaves the nursery, like, Crystal, like, weeping with her baby child in the nursery.
Not her
so
baby
ridiculous
child.
It's just such a typical Crystal moment, too. Like, it just, you know, that's all she's good for is a good cry.
I kind of feel bad because she really did want a baby. Alexis, you know, made her miscarry. And this seemed like an easy path to having a child.
So whenever we watch these episodes, you know, we take notes or whatever. I kind of structure them a little bit more around the characters and what's going on with the characters. And I've noticed something consistent, which is Crystal never really, she's always between worlds. Like, she's never really her own. And she and Blake are not really ever, not for a while at least. I mean, I think in the beginning, she and Blake were a thing. And it's almost like the writers got bored with Crystal at this point. But everybody loves her back then. And, you know, she's a nice screen presence. So they just find ways to keep her around. And it's not like Blake can get divorced. You know, that would screw up the show.
Yeah, she's not making moves. But that, I think you're right. I think that's not her character. You know, she's not Machiavellian in that way.
Which is fine. You don't have to be a Machiavelli to, you know, be interesting. I mean, I will say the one interesting thing she did in this show was her, I don't know if it was a peace offering, but she at least did the right thing and went to tell Alexis that, you know, Steven was coming back.
Yeah, I did like that moment between them because it was a scene where they put all of their bitchiness aside for the greater good, which is the fact that Steven is alive. Now, I did wish we would have got a little more with Adam because Adam and Steven, this is the first time that they've ever met. And you do get a little
bit
of, like,
this isn't your first rodeo,
eye.
Don't you think? They're going to explore that fully probably
oh
later.
Yeah oh honey I mean, no I'm sure I have seven more seasons to go of them exploring that, but just in this moment I wanted more, because you know he's seen Fallon, he knows all the rest
well
of them.
It was interesting because when he and Adam meet at the homecoming, you could see the body language, so you know, good for Gordon Thompson.
Yeah,
like good acting there.
Mm-hmm. He sells the seething really well,
and it was definitely sort of like, who's the imposter here, you know, like who's the pretender, who's the one who doesn't really deserve to be in this family.
Well, speaking of pretending, Steven does do what I have been doing for these episodes since Danny has been introduced, and that's questioning.
Teasing your hair?
No, oh my God. It must take him, I was thinking watching this, it must take the hair crew hours to get Jack's hair to look like
that. I feel like they perfected it with Heather Locklear, and then now that she's gone, they're like, well, we can just do this.
We'll apply that same can of Aquanet to his hair. You see it in Steven's eyes, and he says it, that he's not totally sure that this baby is his. And I just kept thinking, well, is that because you didn't have sex with Sammy Joe, or maybe you didn't have sex with her enough? I mean, we know they did have sex at least a couple times, but maybe not enough to put the bun in the oven.
I felt like, okay, so I know with the scene or scenes or at least dialogue anyway that you're talking about, and that was, to me, that was a lot of the writers just tramp shaming Sammy Joe.
Yeah, Sammy Joe got dragged through the mud this episode, and I'm so offended that she's not here to defend her honor.
It's all like, well, let's never talk about when guys sleep around and who knows how many babies they made with somebody, but she's a problem. Like,
and Steven even says, like, anybody west of the Rockies could be the father.
I know. Again, it's tramp shaming. He even says something like, you know, oh, I saw her naked in the studio.
Yeah, she could have fucked the photographer.
Which supposed to mean that the child's illegitimate, or not his at least. So it for all intents and purposes, we have to assume this child is his. Like, let's not try to get too Baroque with our theories about the story here.
You mean Baroque like the decorations in the honeymoon suite of Jeff and Kirby?
But definitely not like Jeff and Kirby kissing.
It's really exciting that Steven gets to see La Mirage, because, you know, he had peaced out before she took ownership and redecorated it and all the Mark stuff.
Baby, if you're going to be pulled back into the fold, you're going straight to limbo with everybody else.
Well, and everybody's there. Alexis has got her fur coat on and she's going to have lunch. Mark is there. He's got to sort out which woman he wants to bang, if it's Fallon, if it's Alexis. There's so much going on. And then...
Well, I think it's interesting. Today at the bar, on the menu, is only non-alcoholic cocktails. You've got the Virgin Mary, and you've got the club soda.
Oh, I didn't even put that together, that Alexis orders a Virgin Mary,
and
Crystal
is acting like
the
Virgin
Mary.
These people are the drinkinest people I've ever seen on my screen, and they're having Virgin Marys and club soda.
Well, Mark might be on the clock. He might have a lesson after this.
When did that ever stop him?
He's not a big drinker. I think he's drank a beer once, so you need to calm down.
But it does give Alexis a nice opportunity to have a stick of celery to take a nice snappy bite out of when she's punctuating.
Joan does love her props.
Her
man.
Statement. Yeah, she does. If it ain't not a cigarette, it's a stick of celery.
When I gave you the pen, Alexis, you were the one who spelled out the rules. Nothing serious, no room for that in your life.
Well... That's something that you should be used to, having lived your kind of gigolo life. Should have suited you perfectly. Just fun and games, correct?
No, not correct. You see, I'm not always in the mood for just fun and games. Now, if you'll excuse me, this gigolo has a lesson to give.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Mark really makes his mind up in this episode that he's not interested in continuing to fool around with Alexis, no more afternoon delight, and he wants to... make love to Fallon. Ugh, who says that? I want to make love to you. So gross.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people like that. Maybe this is just because it's from back in the day.
She likes it. And we do get the return, not in appearance, but in mention of the St. Denis Club, because apparently that's where Mark takes Fallon.
But now they're at La Mirage, where everything's fake and it's all... just, you know, virgin cocktails in purgatory.
Well, they have cocktails in that amazing fireplace, that arched fireplace. And they make it, they make them talk through the fireplace.
Through the fire.
Through the fire. they talk through the fire, and it seemed like they were probably 50 feet away from each other.
That was supposed to be artsy, I think.
More Jerome Cortland, your favorite Dynasty director.
Always trying out the new camera angles.
But at least they're not jetting off to get married. You know, I like that they're taking it slow, but I just cannot stop thinking about the fact that Fallon is getting into a relationship with her stepmother's first husband. It's so trashy.
Yeah, they've been trying to play that up a little more in this episode. It doesn't really interests me that much, so I'm not paying a whole lot of attention, sorry.
But they do get in the mood with a glass of brandy.
And what I really enjoyed about the through the fire dialogue,
through the fire,
there's this, like, you know, cue the saxophone. Like, why is saxophone always in the 80s associated with,
when you hear
with,
that,
like,
sax, you know it's sex.
You know, it's you could say it's iconic. It's one thing that says what it is, and you don't have to explain. Everybody knows when the saxophone comes on.
And you can get it through the FCC.
Yeah.
Through the FCC. So the episode ends as it begins, Blake and Steven fighting. Steven can't make heads or tails of whether his father paid for his baby or what happened. So he's going to go to New York and find out from Sammy Joe. I mean, it is kind of fucked up that nobody in this family seems to have told Sammy Joe that Steven's alive. But that's fine with me, because next week we're going to get the return of Heather Locklear as Sammy Joe. So I'm excited. Let's go to New York.
I like that. I like that setup, though, because they were trying to write off Sammy Joe as, you know, she's just the baby maker. We don't want her around. She's a tramp. She doesn't share our family values. It's also part of how screwed up the thing with Blake and the baby is. You know, Steven even says it in toward the end here, where Blake and Crystal took his child from him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little messy because we know what the reality is, but Steven doesn't. And rightfully, he needs to figure out the truth.
I think the reason Blake wants this child so bad is that he wants a second chance at fatherhood, and he wants to have a do-over. Like,
oh yeah,
let me see if I can raise a son that's not going to be gay this time,
honey. The show, oh well, yeah, there's that too. I was gonna say, the show's called Dynasty, so, you know, he's got to have his dynasty. And so far,
it's just all more reasons why Blake is just a big bad asshole, and I'm tired of all of his daddy issues. It's aggravating. The whole patriarch thing. I mean, I don't know. I guess at least he keeps things shaken up. So
anyway, the good thing is that Steven is here. Maybe he's queer, so get used to it. Now it's time for the part of the episode where Kyler and I choose our looks of the week. I almost wanted to choose the La Mirage cocktail waiter and waitress's outfits. They're all wearing...
Fallon wore it. Like, why was she wearing the same outfit? That was so weird to me.
She was?
It was like some short red mini skirt looking thing.
No. The La Mirage cocktail waitresses, they look like this comic book character. Her name's like Zendaya or Zenyatta or something. Anyway, it's short shorts. It's like a magician's assistant outfit. It's like this gold tuxedo blazer and little short shorts. And the men are wearing the gold blazers too. They're not wearing the short shorts, which is a missed opportunity.
Well, it's not 1979 anymore, so.
I don't know. It did seem a little chorus line, speaking of 1979. So I cannot give that my look of the week. I think I just have to give it to Alexis and her butterfly homecoming outfit.
I think that's kind of the obvious one to choose, but not for bad reasons. The suit top is incredibly tailored. It's got this...
fits like
not
a glove.
I wouldn't even call it hourglass. It's not that it fits like a glove. It's that it's shaped. And it's got the sort of peplum thing that everybody loved in the 80s, but it's actually not a ruffle. It's structured. And it's clearly a reference to, like, late 30s glamour dressing.
Yeah, which she's done a little bit before.
Yeah. And so, you know, so there's some of those references.
And the feather hat. The
feathers and the veil. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard not to really appreciate that
and that
look.
Face is beat so much that even with a veil covering it, you can see all of that mascara. It's like purple or blue or something.
Yeah, so much makeup showing through. And it's sort of a columnar shape, like, because the skirt is very straight to the ground.
I'm telling you, it fits like a glove.
So it's well tailored and very structured, and yet it still feels of the time. It's not like it's retro. So.
Well, and I like to think as I was watching that scene that she chose this outfit on purpose because, you know, this is Steven coming out of the cocoon and flying like a butterfly, right? So,
oh, I think that's taking it too far.
Well, that's what I like to do. I like to take it too far, just like Pamela Bellwood.
I thought it was like a big X. Madam X.
Oh, God.
Whatever.
Don't bring Madam X up into this.
So, for me, it was Crystal in the gym with the red jazzercise outfit on.
Oh, God.
Well, it's fitness craze, and it's red from head to toe, and also it's boots. Who works out in boots? And the headband. So Linda Evans has become Wonder Woman, but like dressed holiday style for a jazzercise special.
I renounce my wish.
It's a lot to kind of take in. It's, you know, it's fine.
The only thing nice I'll say about that is for many episodes now, we've seen some of these actresses wear outfits that are supposed to be monochromatic. I will say all of the shades of red match in that workout outfit.
Yeah. She looks like she just took a bath in some red paint.
Red for filth or for cardio. That's it for this installment of Dynasty As They Want to Be. If you want to follow along our journey in between episodes on social media, we're at Nasty Podcast, NASTY Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all those places. Kyler, thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode, Fathers and Sons.
Derek, this is the 80s. Your first marriage is just a rehearsal.
Join us next week where we talk about the episode, The Downstairs Bride.
Coffee, tea, or me?
I can't believe we've been recording this whole podcast and Pamela Bellwood's tits have just been out on the table.
I'll take them.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.